Hawa, Toksik Newsom, Salamat. Thank you and welcome to Juno Afternoon from community-supported KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. Conversations for today, Tuesday, December 2nd. The biggest First Friday is almost here. Gallery Walk is happening December 5th, and each day this week we will highlight a little of what's happening. Today we chat with Bailey from Southeast Alaska Land Trust, along with some artists inspired by nature and conservation who will be featured in the Sealt Conservation Art Show this Friday. We also chat with Bo Anderson and Kathleen Harper, whose exhibit Art Scraps will be going up at the City Museum this Friday. And in addition to First Friday, the Juno Dance Theater's annual tradition, the Nutcracker, is also back. We talk with Bridget from Juno Dance Theater about this year's production. It's all coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tau kanakaya ha ani kak, gunish cheesh.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kushtak U, Bill Fawcett. And the word this week is tawe.
Tawe.
That means mountain sheep. And here's a sentence. I want a mountain sheep. Let's hear it again.
Tawe.
Mountain sheep. Gunash Chish Tchune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kushtak O'ish Bill Fawcett was Slukach Adi and the child of a Southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihua Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Akkwan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
And you can join the KTOO newsroom this Thursday, December 4th at 8 a.m. for Coffee with KTOO. Meet our new managing editor, Lisa Fu, and share your thoughts and ideas with the reporters as you start the day with coffee, tea, and other treats. You can stop by as they reflect on this past year's coverage and look ahead to 2026. That's this Thursday, December 4th, starting at 8 a.m. in the KTOO studio downstairs here at 360 Egan Drive. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Gallery Walk is the biggest First Friday of the year. It's this Friday, December 5th, and Southeast Alaska Land Trust, or SEALT, as some people like to call it, has something special in store. They have partnered with local Southeast artists to showcase some of the conserved lands via their artwork. And here to share more about this unique program from SEALT is Bailey Williams. How are you today?
So well. Thanks for having me.
And we are also joined by two of the artists. We have Terry Gardner-Robus.
Hello.
Good to see you again. And also Patrick Rip.
Good afternoon.
Excellent. Well, it's so glad to have you all here. It's so nice to have you all. So, Bailey, let's start first for those who may not know what the Southeast Alaska Land Trust is. Just give us a quick reminder of what that is.
Absolutely. The Southeast Alaska Land Trust protects lands and waters throughout Southeast Alaska. We are a local conservation nonprofit by Alaskans for Alaskans, and we protect areas especially that have exceptional ecological value, improve climate change resilience, but also areas of recreation or areas that preserve access to outdoor recreational opportunities. And I'm sure I'm not the only person who lives here in part for access to being able to forage and being able to hike and being able to be outside. And we often, I think it's really easy to gloss over the word recreation as like something maybe superficial, but I love that the heart of the word recreate. It's the place where you go to recreate yourself, to re-inspire yourself and recheck in. So when you put that in the context of conservation, we're talking about conserving areas of respite and places of peace and creative regeneration. We go outside to connect with the tides. Yeah. So this project came about kind of very organically because there's so many amazing artists in this town. It was probably inevitable that our paths would cross with some of them. And we had this idea of local talent going out onto our conserved sites and painting what they saw.
And this is the second year that you've done this. You kicked it off last year and it was so nice you decided to do it twice.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It was it was definitely a learning curve. It turns out that we had never done an art show before, so but it was very fun and the community's response was so enthusiastic and so kind, we thought we'd do it again.
Excellent. That's so cool. And this is going to be happening now. This is interesting because it doesn't continue as some art shows that go up around town, they go up and then they stick around for the month. This is really, if you want to see everything in person, you have to show up this Friday at your, I guess, old office. Tell us a little bit about where this is, and because you guys moved.
Yes.
Yeah?
Thank you for giving me a chance to speak to that.
Yeah.
We were in the same office suite on Seward Street and the Valentine Building for 30 years, and I think we became we expanded past what we outgrew it a bit, but we do love that space. So this art show is in some ways a farewell and a gratitude to our original nest at 119 Seward Street. But we have subsequently moved to our new headquarters called Otter Pond in Lemon Creek,
okay,
featuring both a pond and otters. And yeah, so it's a lovely space.
Lovely name. I like that. Yeah. 119 Seward Street, which is just above the Rookery for those who may know, right?
Yeah.
So, and you'll be there this Friday. And what are the hours? It starts at 4, right?
Soft start at 4. We'll be there at least until 7. But
okay.
Gallery
so walk the first has, Friday yeah. gallery walk situation.
Yeah.
But then if you miss it and you still want to look at the paintings or maybe get one of the paintings, you can go on to southeastalaskalandtrust.org, right?
That's right. There will be an online show afterwards.
Okay, great. Okay, cool. Well, let's talk to our artists here. So, Terry, welcome in again. Thank you so much. What inspired you to work with Southeast Alaska Land Trust and do some work?
Well, it's nice to go out onto the lands, and it's... And when you need to paint and be outside, that's mm-hmm. a really good place to go. Also, the purpose of the land trust is something that, you know, really was great. It saves that land, that it preserves that land for hopefully ever, and keeps the wildlife and the opportunities for everybody to be on it. Or to view it, and so painting there, just making sure that people kind of know what that land trust is, I think is a good, you know, it's a really good thing to have people know.
I know that Bailey mentioned that you were allowing access on the conserved lands. Are there areas that maybe you can't get to sometimes that you were able to see and work with and paint for this particular project?
Well, we went to some places where we didn't know we could get down into. Bailey showed us one time a place where we weren't sure exactly the trail down mm-hmm. to Mendenhall Peninsula area. So that was really cool. So now we know how to get down to there. And there's lots of views that we can paint there.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at one for those who are watching the live stream. I'm looking at one. I think it's titled Edge of the Refuge. Can you tell us a little bit about your work? What do you work with in terms of, is it acrylics? Is it oil? What are you working with?
Yeah, the Edge of the Refuge was in oil, and okay. that was over at Peatland Point Parcel. And there was actually low tide, right, Patrick? I think it was a nice low tide. And so we got out further beyond the beach, or, you know, kind of into the, almost into the tide water area. And then I looked back and painted there.
Nice.
And it was in oils, and I have a little kit.
I see. Okay. Is that your primary work, is in oils?
Yeah, I usually work in oils. I okay. like all trying other things, too.
Yeah. And how often do you get to get out in nature? I'm just curious.
Well, I've been up at Eagle Crest in February before, and it's just kind of dependent on how, if I have stuff ready. And,
right.
And, yeah, I try to get out in the summers quite a bit, summer, spring, fall.
I guess that would be interesting, right? Like painting the difference between a winter landscape and a summer landscape, especially here in Juneau, because it looks so different,
yeah,
right?
Right, yeah.
And I guess more white in the paint. Hopefully, right? Hopefully.
There's a lot of colors in white, though.
That's true. Yeah, a lot of different shades in there. That's cool. And how many pieces will you have in the show on Friday?
I think I have five. Yeah, five.
Okay. And now, Bailey, we're going to talk to Patrick here in a second, but these two are not the only artists involved. Do you want to shout out the other artists who will be part of the show?
For sure. We have Timmy Johnson, Tom Bornstein, and Gina Morris are also joining.
Okay, great. That's wonderful. A couple other photos and just another reminder. It's December 5th at 4 p.m., and you can see it this Friday, 119 Seward Street. And then now I'm going to switch over to Where the Birds Return. Patrick Ripp, tell us a little bit about this photo.
Well, Terry had mentioned that Bailey took us out to the Mendenhall Peninsula wetlands. It was the first time for Terry and me. And I just loved that experience because the painting went so well and went quickly.
Mm.
As I've said to many people, that it's like athletics, a sport where sometimes you're in the groove and other days you're not. And that night I was in the groove and it went well. So it's a really pleasant experience, a memory for me.
And are you also working in oil?
I'm working in acrylic.
Acrylic, okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know the difference. Can you explain the difference to me?
Acrylic is water-based and it dries very quickly, especially on warm days. Once it sets, you really can't work with it again, whereas oil takes quite a bit of time to dry,
and
it has a little more flow to it.
Interesting.
So with acrylic, yeah, I have to make decisions fairly quickly. Otherwise, it will dry very fast.
Interesting. Especially, I guess, outdoors in the summer, it would dry pretty quick.
Very
right?
quickly, within 30 seconds sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, on a warm day.
So what happens when you don't like what's on the canvas?
Well, the beauty of acrylic is you can paint right over it again.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to wait.
Okay. Oh,
whereas
nice.
In oil, if you don't like what you've put down, you can either scrape it, or if you try to put a new color down, it will become muddy, potentially muddy, brown, gray.
Oh, okay.
With the mixing of the colors.
And Patrick, why did you want to work with Sealt on this project?
I was introduced to it through Terry and her husband, Matt Robus, who was on the board. And I was more than happy to help out a good cause. And Terry and I are part of the Plain Rain Painters of Juneau, and we love painting outdoors. And this just spoke to us to be able to paint outdoors in these beautiful parcels, that some of which we've not seen before, or I haven't experienced before.
Are you mostly painting landscapes in your work?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, yeah.
Okay. Terry, is that what you mostly do too, is landscapes?
I do lots of things. I love painting landscapes, but I also love painting bouquets and flowers and still lifes. And
stuff you can do inside.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
When it's too cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, that's awesome. And for you, Patrick, I'm just curious, when did the art bug get to you?
In the mid-90s, I was taking French classes out at UAS after traveling to France and just fell in love with that language. And then the next year, French was not offered. And I thought, you know, I really would like to continue taking classes out here for something to do in the winter. So I took a drawing class, and that's what I
you
sort
got
of
hooked.
Yeah, I did.
Wow. What about you, Terry? When did it start for you, this journey of art?
Well, a long time ago, I took some oil painting classes when I was 11 or 12, something like that. Oil painting, too. And so that probably started it, and then kind of off and on until this until 2011 when I got a degree in art. So.
Yeah. Oh, so it took you to school and everything.
It did. I first majored in biology, and then...
And you realize what you should really be doing.
Yeah.
That's like me. I was a double major for a while. I was theater and computer science mm-hmm. back before the dot-com boom. And some days I do reflect and say, wow, maybe I should have stuck with computer science. Mm-hmm. I could be one of those retired billionaires right now. But I didn't. And here I am. And I'm better for it, I think. Anyway, Terry, where can we find out more about you and your work beyond this show?
Oh, I have a website. Mm-hmm. So it's terryrobusstudio.com.
Terry Robus Studio. And that is spelled, how do you spell your last name for folks?
R-O-B-U-S.
R-O-B-U-S. Terryrobusstudio.com.
Right.
Okay, great. That's where you can follow. Do you have an Instagram too?
Yeah, I have Instagram, just Terry Robus, I think. Terry underscore Robus. And Facebook as well.
Okay, cool. What about you, Patrick?
You probably can't find me. I'm not on social media, and I don't have a website yet.
Okay.
But
he's off the grid, folks. He's off the grid.
I've really tried to stay off social media, but I should for my art purposes. But, yeah, you can certainly take a look at my seven pieces on the Sealed website mm-hmm. to get
Excellent.
A sense of what I do.
Okay, great. And you all be there on Friday as well, so people can meet and chat with you a little bit more about this project.
Yep.
Yeah. And Bailey, where can we find out more about the art show and also just the Southeast Alaska Land Trust in general?
SoutheastAlaskaLandTrust.org, or honestly, I mean this very sincerely, we are very much a community-based organization, so come by our offices, come talk. I'm at Bailey@Sealed.org, and I love chatting with people. I'm so grateful you two both mentioned some of the conservation sites that we have off Mendenhall Peninsula, because those are ones that are vital for preserving the integrity of the Mendenhall Wetlands Wildlife Refuge. And apparently they're not commonly known that those are public access. You can you're welcome to go and explore. In fact, if you spend much time on the wetlands, you may have passed through one of our conservation sites, and welcome to it. So if you have questions about the lands we conserve and how you can access it, yeah, just shoot me an email.
Or stop by, what did you call the office out there in Lemon Creek?
Otter Pond.
Otter Pond.
5150 Glacier Highway.
5150 Glacier Highway. I like the nickname. That's really
cool. So much better,
cool.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. And of course, oh, yes, Terry.
I made a painting of Otter Pond.
Oh, excellent.
So it's one of the paintings. So.
It'll be on display this Friday. And those are all going to be up for sale.
Yes.
And then those sales help out the land trust, right?
That's right.
Okay. That's a wonderful thing. And if you can't make it this Friday again, you're going to be able to, the ones that don't sell this Friday, they'll be available on the website for people to look at and possibly purchase, right?
That's it, exactly.
Okay, great. So learn more about the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. It's an awesome organization. They're doing great work here. And I also love, and this, when you were saying that, Bailey, I was like, well, maybe people don't know because it's possible that you don't put up signs everywhere that say Southeast Alaska, you know, so, which is also nice, right? It's just leaving it as it should be. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think we're understated as an organization, and we're doing really exciting work in our quiet ways.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for being here. Gunnar Cheech for coming in today and telling us a little bit about it. It's the climate, it is the Southeast Alaska Conservation Art Show. It's happening this Friday during Gallery Walk, 119 Seward Street above the Rookery. Check it out. It starts at 4 p.m. Gunnar Cheech. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here is Yale's Climate Connection segment. That's why I had climate on the brain, but I think it matches talking about conservation.
Yeah.
So here you go. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections.
Mark.
Hollywood film sets are bustling with people, from actors and makeup artists to camera operators and directors. And they all need to be fed.
It's really like going kind of to a wedding every day for lunch.
That's Hillary Cohen. She and Samantha Liu have both worked as assistant directors on film and TV sets, and they've seen how much food can go to waste, sometimes because too much was made, other times because scheduling changes left fewer people on set than expected. So to keep food from getting trashed, they created the nonprofit Everyday Action. Their team collects unused meals from sets and brings them to pantries, shelters, low-income apartments, and other places where they're needed.
And we're saving anywhere from, I'd say, 500 meals to 2,000 meals a week.
So the effort is helping to feed people who may struggle to afford food. And it helps the climate, too, because it keeps so much food from rotting in landfills and emitting climate-warming methane. And it reduces how much food overall has to be produced, processed, and trucked, all of which creates carbon pollution. So there are multiple benefits to putting Hollywood's leftovers to good use. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Mike Lane. Today is Tuesday, December 2nd, and on this day, back in 1893, prospectors James Patton and James Smith reported averaging $10 a day each. Also, R. Goldstein reported that a rich vein has been struck in his tunnel on his Bonanza Lode claim, directly under the new courthouse. That's a look back at this day in 1893.
That is Mike Lane, and you can check out Mike Lane every morning during Morning Edition on KTOO from about 6 to 9 p.m. Actually, a.m. I think he actually starts earlier now. I think he's starting in the 5 o'clock hour, so that's kind of cool. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from listener-supported public media station KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. And it goes like this. Bump, ba-da-ba-bump, bump, bump.
Sounds familiar.
It's a theme that has been sung around the world. Even if you've never seen a production of the Nutcracker Ballet, you've probably hummed that song at some point during the holidays, or you're hearing it in the stores as you shop. There's Muzak versions, there's other versions out there, there's rock versions, I'm sure. It's all kinds of versions. It's an annual tradition in many communities, and Juno Dance Theater is keeping that tradition alive for another year here in the capital city. Bridget Lujan is here to share more about this year's version.
Hi, Boston. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. So are you in the middle of it?
We are at the sprinting towards the finish line.
We are
opening this Friday, first Friday, of course, gallery walk. We like to be in the mix of all of that, those happenings. So there's plenty of time to shop downtown, buy some art, and then come see a show.
Yeah, you're over at the JDHS Yada Akathle Auditorium over at the high school.
Yeah.
Friday, December 5th is at 7 p.m. Saturday you have two shows, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. And then Sunday you have a show, a matinee at 2 p.m. And in addition to the shows, you have some other cool things that are in and around the shows. Tell me about those lovely things.
Oh, yes. Any stranger to the JDHS environment would walk in and not know where they are, because we completely transform the commons. We've got the atrium this year set up with professional photo shoots. Families can book a mini photo shoot session with our professional photographers who are donating 100% of the proceeds from those photo shoots to JDT, which is just so generous and lovely and awesome. But they've got three different backdrops and costumes and props. And so whether you want to dress up your little one and have their photo taken, or you want to bring the family and do a family photo session, it's just another add-on, another opportunity to celebrate with us. And you actually don't even need tickets to the ballet to come and do that. So, it's just, it's open to the community. But yeah, we've got the Land of Sweets Tea and Tour. Those are two events within the event right before the matinee performances. So on Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock, this is a ticketed event and limited. I think Sunday might be sold out, but starts at 1 o'clock with the Nutcracker story. They do cookie decorating. They sit in the VIP section of the auditorium to watch the ballet. They have gourmet treats at intermission. They fill up their containers from the candy bar.
This is a whole thing.
Oh, it's a thing. And then they watch Act Two. And if they so choose, they can stay come up on stage after the show and have a photo taken with the principals and the cast. So,
oh, that's so
yeah.
Amazing.
So that's just and that includes the ticket. So when folks see that pricing, it includes the ticket to the ballet.
Okay.
So excellent. And then of course the ballet, the featured the headliner event. We're there.
Tell me a little bit about. I heard there were some changes in the ballet this year, or there's some different casting thing. Tell me what's going on.
We try to mix it up a little bit. Sometimes it's intentional. Sometimes by accident, and sometimes we're just making it up as we go along. But this year we have our same guest artists from last year. Nanako Yamamoto and Aldir Montero from American Repertory Ballet. Mm. They're just divine. They have such a wonderful they partner at their company, so they dance together all the time, and you can just tell the connection. There's just such a romantic relationship with them when they're performing. And then JDT has gone through some changes. We have a new principal teacher and ballet master, Anna McDowell, as of this year. And Anna has choreographed a new variation for the coffee variation. It was a pas de deux. It was a duet previously, and it had we're trying to shed some of the cultural references, and so the whole Arabian theme and that's kind of gone away. This is more of a in the spirit of coffee blossoms, and it's a solo choreographed by Anna McDowell. So that's her contribution to the existing choreography from Zachary Hench.
Okay.
And then a few years ago, you probably remember I assume you remember. This is foremost on your mind, I'm sure, Boston. But
always.
We debuted a new tea, which previously was Chinese tea, and just trying to be a little more sensitive to audiences and what we're putting on the stage. And so this was kind of the last of that. It's not Spanish hot chocolate anymore. It's just hot chocolate.
Right.
And there's no need to have the references if we don't have the student body to perform them appropriately. Right. So, so we're very excited about that new choreography. And
I have a really cool picture here I'm going to show for those who might be on the stream watching Anna McDowell working with the Clara for this year, which is Juliet McMillan. And I remember Juliet. Now, what's interesting about the Nutcracker Ballet is that kids, they go there for the Juno Dance Theater. They stay in the Juno Dance Theater for many, many years and sometimes start out as like little bugs or snails in some animal show thing.
Yes.
And then they grow into being able to be Clara when they get a little bit older, right?
Absolutely. It's such a great show for schools to do because there's roles for the very little ones, mm-hmm. and then our most advanced dancers. In fact, we have two high school seniors this year, and they're both dancing the Dewdrop part, which is kind of the mecca of solos for students here at JDT. But one of them started as a baby mouse a million years ago, and so they talked to this year's baby mice and said, you can do Dewdrop someday. You mentioned Juliet. I think she was. Do you remember her from Carnival of the Animals?
I do. Yeah. I do. Definitely. I definitely remember
her. She was a little chicken, the little one that got away. And
yeah, for sure. I love doing that voiceover for y'all a few years ago. Was that 3 years ago now?
2022. Yeah, it sure was.
Wow, that's so long ago.
We'll have to get you back
for sure. Please, anytime. And then I have we're speaking of the littles. I have one other photo here, which I just think is adorable. It is three children, and there's some big giant mouse behind them dancing. But they've got their little hands in front of their face. Like, are they scared right there? Is that what they're doing?
I think they're scared and surprised because they've just been thrown into the middle of the battle and these hungry mice are coming after them. So, yeah, that's their – that tends to be our most introductory role, the baby mice and cheese. We take extra good care of them. We try to anyway because they are only in pre-ballet. For many of them, it's their first time on the stage.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Because how old are kids like in this photo?
They're 5. We've had 4-year-olds. but generally 5 to 7 is that youngest age group.
And is that then, is that the youngest you usually take for?
No, we have younger classes. They have to work up to the Nutcracker. It's a lot to ask in the way of commitment from families and students, and we don't want them to run away and have a not anything but a positive experience with dancing. So creative move. If they start with us at age 3, that's our youngest. They'll take creative movement and possibly another class called studies in movement. But when they get to pre-ballet, that is when you're eligible to be in the Nutcracker, regardless of your age. So if you...
That's amazing. So I don't know how many years you've been with the organization, but have you seen, are there kids who start at like that young age and go all the way through high school?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Abigail Portillas is the senior that I was mentioning. Okay. Yeah. She's been with us since she was 3.
Wow.
And there's others that have been. I mean, when my own daughter was at the school, you had to be 8 years old. So they had maybe a 10-year run if they did it every year. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, if kids, when Zach came on as artistic director in 2015, he lowered that age, was a little bit more inclusive, getting more students involved earlier on. And so a lot of them, by the time they're 11 or 12 years old, they've danced most every part there is to dance.
Right.
So it's just, and they still love it.
Do some of the students go on to study dance in college and things like that?
We do, yeah. We have some pursue professional tracks with you know, and don't go the college route. They'll get into a trainee program, for example.
Oh, they go right to working with the company.
And then, you know, they could do a trainee program or an apprenticeship, and then ultimately, you know, with the hope of auditioning and getting into a company. There's other students who are dance majors or minors. We've got a double major right now. I think she takes, it's either organic chemistry or biochem.
Oh my gosh.
With a double major in dance. And so she's working in the lab, you know, curing some grievous disease and then dancing and choreographing and doing costumes. So,
well, it's interesting that you're saying that some of them go right into like an apprenticeship with a company or something, because dancer life can be shorter, right? In terms of how long somebody can be a ballet dancer.
Right.
And of course, not to dissuade parents from, you know, of course, parents want their kids to go to college. I'm not saying don't go to college, but like you could go to college later after your dance career is over, potentially, or like this other young woman, double major instantly. And so you have that other thing there when the dance might, because, you know, you could get a knee injury or you could get a back injury.
You never know when it's your last day of dancing. I mean, that's true of anything really, but it's just such a fragile career. And when you're all in all the time like that, it's really grueling. Now, I, of course, was a theater major turned accountant, so I can't speak from personal experience as far as pursuing a dance career. But I think what's happening is it's just the dance careers are looking different than they used to. There used to be a formula, especially for ballet. You know, you had to be into an elite program by the time you were 16 or you're done, you're washed up. It's never going to happen. And you have to be in a company by the time you're 20 and you have to be a principal by the time you're 25. But that's not the case anymore. We're hearing stories all the time of professional dancers who started in later in their teen years, and they've gone on to be principal dancers and then ballet dancers who are with a company and don't make principal till their late 30s, and they still have a glorious career, and some never make principal, which is the hierarchy within the ballet company.
Well, and if you, and the other thing that's great about it is even if your kiddo doesn't go on to pursue it and they go be a doctor or an organic chemist or some other thing, they have an appreciation for dance that they can then pass on to their kids, which is also part of it, you know, is making sure that we keep culture alive and we have kids who are appreciating dance and music and theater and all those different things.
It's building the audience and the appreciation, but it's also a bunch of other things. It's discipline, drive, determination, grit, balance, the physical. I mean, it's so, so hard. I don't think ballet is cut out for everyone, or dance. I mean, you just really have to have a thick skin, and you have to be willing to look rejection in the face, injury in the face. I mean, it's just these lessons are things that are very handy to have as you go through life pursuing your other endeavors.
Pursuits. And you can go and enjoy the dance yourself and with your kids.
Absolutely.
And just have them see if they're even interested. With the Nutcracker, it's the Juno Dance Theater. The Nutcracker is this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It starts this Friday at 7 p.m. There's also the Land of Sweets Tea and Tour, and you can also just stop in. You don't even have to go to the show. You can just go experience the common area over at JDHS Yada Kathle and see what the transformation is for the lands of the Nutcracker. And of course, for tickets and more information, you can always go to junodance.org.
That's
that
right.
Is where you can get tickets and information on the show. And if you're interested in having your kiddos take class, it's also available there on the website, all the different classes that you have.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll be starting up a new semester here in January.
Excellent. Bridget, thanks so much for coming in and sharing with us a little bit about the Nutcracker. I really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here's this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Miccosukee tribe calls the Florida Everglades home. Over the years, they have faced climate change's impact on their lands. Now they're also fighting a federal immigration detention center. Our Living Lands producer Daniel Spalding spoke to Talbert Cypress, the tribe's chairman.
The Miccosukee have always had a deep relationship with the Everglades. Can you describe your homelands and what they mean to you and your tribe?
Our homelands, we've been here for hundreds of years. Our main area where we resided was up in southern Georgia, northern Florida, but we would venture out into the Everglades for gathering and hunting and that sort of thing. And so when the Seminole Wars happened, we retreated into the Everglades and went further south in order to evade capture and be removed to Oklahoma. And so after the wars was over, there was about 150 tribal members left. And from that, that's where we've descended from, the Miccosukee people as well as the Seminole people. And the Everglades is not just the place where we live, it's also a part of our being.
And Florida faces rising sea levels, stronger storms, and shifting ecosystems. Can you talk about the specific ways that climate change has affected the Miccosukee lands and people?
We've seen climate change throughout the years, and we've seen the way the water flow has changed through the Everglades throughout the years, and so the Miccosukee people have always adapted to it, but we've always given warnings to the entities and people moving here about the ever-changing way, all the settlement, what the settlement does to the environment. And so we've been sounding alarm for years and years and years. And more recently, the federal government has stepped up in providing funding for Everglades restoration, which to us is very pretty much an acknowledgement of all the damage that's been done already.
And given those challenges, what are some of the solutions that you and your tribe are working towards?
Well, we're big proponents of Western Everglades restoration. That's basically where all of our water comes from, all of our drinking water. The restoration projects that they focus on are usually involved the bays and, where people already reside. And so, they're meeting the problem further down the road rather than where it starts, And so the tribe has been very focused on shifting that, that work to go towards more of the Western Everglades.
And your tribe has been in the news lately for your fight against the immigration detention center in the Everglades that some are calling Alligator Alcatraz. Can you talk about the concerns you have about that facility and its impact on the land and the environment?
The National Preserve, where the detention center is located, it's in the middle of the preserve, and that preserve was established in 1974, I believe. And it was established specifically to prevent development of a major airport there. And us, along with conservation groups and gladesmen, all came together, and politicians as well, to really put a stop to that project. And when that was done, there was only one tarmac that was completed. And that tarmac is where the detention center currently sits now. They've had to bring in supplies. They've had to remove waste. They've had to bring in lighting. They've had to bring in generators and all that sort of thing. And pave more ground there. So that's our big concern right now, that they haven't gone through the process of consulting with tribes and consulting with environmental protection agencies and all that. And so, you know, for us, our big concern is that we have ceremonial grounds nearby. We have traditional medicine gathering sites nearby. We have traditional resting places nearby. And all of that, you know, is a big concern for us, as well as the environment.
In this legal battle against the Immigration Detention Center, you join environmental groups like Friends of the Everglades, Center for Biological Diversity, and Earth Justice. Can you talk about the potential you see for Indigenous nations to work together with environmental groups going forward?
That's been our goal as a tribe, you know, during my administration, to really, not just with environmental groups and landowners out here, but also to reach across both aisles, Republicans and Democrats. And, you know, I think we all have a common mission, which is, you know, to preserve the Everglades. But, you know, everybody being in the same room really moves things along so that we can find solutions to these complex issues, rather than everybody just looking out for their own interests.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You are listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson, right here at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Art Scraps, opening this Gallery Walk Friday at the City Museum, is a collaborative art exhibition by Kathleen Harper and Bo Anderson. Kathleen and Bo spent the past year upcycling, recycling, and reusing materials to create a variety of art pieces for their multimedia extravaganza. They both, along with Kate Ross from the museum, join me now in the studio. Gwyneth Chishwasiti, Kate, good to see you.
Yeah, always good to see you, too.
Welcome back. We'll get to all the other business at the museum here shortly. Mm-hmm. I'm Gwyneth Cheesh. Kathleen, welcome in.
Thank you, Boston.
Thank you so much. And Bo.
Hello.
Hello. Gwyneth Cheesh, for being here. I know that Bo is also a very, in addition to obviously having this exhibit, is a very big participant in the 12 by 12 by 12. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, right?
I do. I've done that the last 3 years, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And do you do the by 12, the extra by 12?
I've done it once.
I think. Okay. Excellent. That's so cool. So let's start over here with you, Kate. We'll talk a little bit about what else is going on at the museum before we get to talking about the show that's also going to be opening this Friday. What else is happening?
Yeah. So Gallery Walk, we have our big opening. We also have the show by Kirsha Hughes-Scandies. Stitch in Time will continue through the month of December. So come check that out as well. But speaking of Gallery Walk, we are a trolley stop. So I want to make sure everyone knows that. So it's technically at the Capitol, but it's for the Capitol and the City Museum. So in case it is a gross, slushy Gallery Walk evening.
That never happens
never.
In Juneau.
But no. You can just hop on the trolley, and that conveniently goes right there at the Capitol, right across the street from us, down to the State Museum, all the way down South Franklin and then to Front Street. So it's a nice little route they have.
The trolley is open. And
it's Kirsch, free.
And Kirsch's show runs through the 20th, I believe,
the
right?
The 20th or 21st. Yeah, the 20th of December.
Okay. And that's really awesome. I love that. That's really cool.
Yeah, her show's really fun. It's embroidery based on kind of scenery and flowers and things like that from all around Juneau. And I have a couple very, very limited run of ornaments, hand-embroidered ornaments that are for sale right now. But there's only four. So okay. If you want a hand-embroidered ornament, there's only four left. So come by the museum or come stop into the store when you come for Gallery Walk.
Well, I'm assuming they won't be there by Friday at this point. You just mentioned that, so you never know. People are running there right now.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, remind everybody about admission and days and times and stuff like that, just so people know.
So we have free admission all winter and December. That is thanks to Michelle Storer. So we're really, really grateful for her support. But yeah, come by anytime. It's free. Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 4 are our open hours right now. And then Gallery Walk, we will be open until 7 for that opening reception.
Absolutely. Okay, which is going to be Art Scraps. So Bo and Kathleen, you are a, I don't know, entertainment powerhouse, a theatrical powerhouse. You guys have been in Juneau for many years. Tell us a little bit about your backstory. I think you met doing backstage stuff over at PT, right? Perseverance Theater.
I was a PT intern at in 2004, building the sets, sort of helping him come together, paint them. Kathleen was making the props, and then we fell in love.
Uh-oh.
Like you do.
One of them theater romances?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And here you are
over
all these
20
years
later. Here we are.
22 years later. Mm-hmm. Were you making stuff together back then? Have you always been making things is what I'm wondering?
Yeah.
Together.
Not always together, but I would say that there have been plenty of projects and times where Bo's been working on something and said, hey, I need help with this, and I've jumped in to help him, and times where I've been like, hey, I need help with this, and he's jumped in to help me.
Yeah.
In our Juneau real estate renting days, we were always had a project, one of us.
Right.
Clear a space in the living room, let one paint, and then that gets packed away and somebody's doing something else.
Yeah, and Bo, you right now, you're the you take care of the theaters for Juneau School District at the high school and now the middle school.
I'm the auditorium manager for JDHS and TMMS. Yes.
Yes. Okay. And Kathleen, you work at the Centennial Hall or the Jack or both?
For the Jack. Yes.
For the Jack.
But
okay.
I run Centennial Hall and the Jack's JACC spaces for the JAHC.
I made fun of those letters all the time. Arts and Culture Center for the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council.
Kind of in charge of all of the rentals and space use and logistics and all that fun stuff.
I see. Okay. So you're all still working in that field, which is amazing. So how did you have time to create this show?
Started early.
Yeah,
started early.
As soon as we got the word from the museum staff, we were like, okay, better start making stuff now.
I see. Okay.
So
Kathleen's still plugging away.
I am.
Final
I'm
touches.
Slow.
Final touches for things on Friday.
All of my pieces take time.
So let me ask, what is upcycling? Who wants to tell me what upcycling is?
It's just generally taking something instead of putting it in the landfill. You give it a second life as something else.
Oh, so repurposing.
Reuse. Yeah.
Okay, I love that. I used to love that when I was doing theater. I always liked to make things into other things, like make a piece of furniture turn into something else, like during the show. That was always fun for me. So is that an official term, upcycling, or is that something you all created?
We didn't create it. It's around.
It's around.
It's in the
ether.
That was your chance, Bo. You could
trademark.
Because we know what recycling is and reusing, but reusing is different than upcycling. Then, because upcycling is taking, well, I don't know. Give me an example. Is it taking like a lamp and
like
turning
saying
it into
like,
something
oh,
else?
This is junk, and you can say, or is it junk?
Okay.
Can we maybe turn this into not junk? You know, so somebody's thrown away used canvas. Give it a fresh coat of paint. Wow. And wow, look, you can now have a whole new thing.
I see.
So,
Okay. And do you both, I know you work together on things, but I know that some of your work is also separate. Like, are you working more in like the physical realm and you're working more in like the on the canvas realm or
I'm
no?
Always in the conceptual realm.
Conceptual realm. Okay.
But I made a lot of, started with a lot of carving pieces.
Okay.
Wood craft pieces. Taking scrap lumber that was bound for the Juneau landfill and just cutting it up and making little birds out of it,
Oh, I see. Okay.
We had a tree taken out of the yard, and now that's a bunch of fish heads on the wall of the museum right now.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And how did you both, let me start with you, Kathleen. How did you get started in making things into art things? Like, when did that start for you? Was that like a young age thing?
Oh, yeah. I don't know when.
Just from like birth.
I've always liked to take things. I've always been very drawn to mixed media. Since forever. And even in college, I was always like, I'm going to take all of these weird screws that I found in a scrap heap and turn them into a cathedral by gluing them together. You know, I'm very much like that kind of person. Also like to let the materials just sort of like lead me on a journey.
Okay.
Because sometimes you're like, ooh, this is visually interesting. What can I do with this? Okay, if I put it like this, oh, it kind of looks like this. All right. So if I do it like this and I put it like this, then this is the sort of scenery that I'm getting. For example, I was stripping wire. There's a lot of wire in this piece in the show, and there were all of the red casings from it. And looking at them, I said, "This kind of looks like it's fire alarm wire. That's kind of funny. And it also looks like fire if you kind of let the curves go a certain way." Mm-hmm. So I made an entire piece that is just like stripped pieces of fire alarm casing, which would normally go into the trash, and made it look like a fire.
That's what I was going to ask is like, how does that work in the brain? But you just explained it by sort of just allowing the materials to sort of speak to you and get ideas and then iterate and change things and then put it all together and it becomes something. Because that's a little different than... Is it different than what you do, Bo? Like in terms, because you're talking about you're stuck in the conceptual realm. So are you like seeing it in your brain or no?
I have lots of favorites that I revisit, like little birds. I'm just drawing and doodling a lot. Fish heads, I just find.
So when you saw your tree trunk or your tree, did you instantly think fish heads?
I took the chainsaw to the logs that were in the yard and started making them into smaller pieces and seeing what I could do with it. But yeah, a lot of it was going to be fish heads.
I see.
A couple of them are trout that are in the show, like full fish tail to head.
Yeah, okay.
I don't really go into it with a full flesh plan, but I have my favorites. I like fishing.
Right, okay.
Everything.
And sort of the outdoor Juno life kind of thing. Yeah. That's definitely in there. I do have a photo here for those who might be on the stream. Obviously, people can see this on the Facebook and everywhere else. It's over on the juno.org/museum website. It's of you two sitting on top of the museum. Who created this piece?
That was me.
It reminds me, it almost has a flavor of that famous one with the pitchfork.
Oh, yeah, American Gothic.
Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you. It has that feeling. There's no pitchfork in this image.
No, it's just us sitting on the museum.
It's the neutral faces, probably.
It is maybe the neutral faces, and just the togetherness of it. But, you know, you're giant people on top of the city museum, which is hilarious.
It's a statement.
Yeah. and so this Friday, and then the show's going to run. How long will it run, Kate?
Just for the month of December.
The month of December. Mm-hmm. And what can we expect to see in addition to images like this? What are we going to see this Friday?
You're going to see all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like an eclectic mix of and a peer into Bo and Mai's brains.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. It's like we're cracking open.
But, I mean, there's mixed media pieces. There's paintings. There's carvings.
Talk about your trees.
I've got four trees I made out of copper wire and lighting gel and beads and various other things that are so much of my life. But they're really cool.
They're beautiful. I was looking at the one today, and Kathleen mentioned the theater gels, so we know what that is. But in case mm-hmm. people don't, the little colored pieces of plastic that make the lights different colors. And so because this tree, all the leaves and the boughs are made out of these pieces of gel, when the light comes through it, the shadow is not just a dark shadow. It's the color, because it's coming through this colored plastic. And so there's some really, really cool effects with all of the different mixed media that's used as well.
Okay. Where do you all make this stuff? Is your house just full of art supplies and things?
I mean, yeah. I mean, the living room has turned into the art zone.
I'm sure during this week especially, right? Yeah.
Well, for the last year. Yeah. since September.
It's been craft tables everywhere in our living room.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, and then like whenever there's not guests in the guest bedroom, then that turns into just like, you know, art nonsense. And then Bo has his little like the
fish
old
dungeon.
Yeah, we call it the fish dungeon. It's
an
old cistern
turned into a room
that Bo has outfitted to be his wood shop. So
I see. Okay.
But yeah, it's underneath the house, so you know.
That's cool. Now is this the first time that you two have had a show together?
Yes.
Wow. After 22 years or so, it's the first art exhibit. So is that what encouraged you to apply for the gallery program at the City Museum? Was like, hey, we want to do something together?
Yeah, I think we talked about it because I like making weird stuff. And Bo is now, as I like to jokingly say, Juno famous for his little free art gallery works. His last show was such a success, but we were like, you know, we should do something together sometime. That would be fun. And then this opportunity came up, and it was like, I'm going to apply. Let's see what happens.
It's all Kate Ross's fault.
Yeah, Kate Ross.
You can blame me. That's
She's trying
fine.
To make us famous.
That's good.
I want everybody to be famous.
Well, it is the show. It's Art Scraps. Welcome to the wonderful worlds of Kathleen and Bo, the full title. It's featuring Kathleen Harper and Bo Anderson. It's a look inside their minds. So check it out. It's going to run for the full month. But this Friday, of course, during Gallery Walk, there'll be an opening reception from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Down at the museum. Just look for Bo and Kathleen sitting on top of the building. you can also bring a can of food for the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. Food Bank definitely needs as much food as possible during these times.
Yeah, so we're encouraging people to bring by some non-perishable food items on First Friday. Good way to kick off your, you know, kind of season of giving. But also all through the month of December, you can bring any food to donate by the City Museum during our open hours. Come bring a can or two on First Friday. That'd be fun.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Gwyneth Cheese, for coming in and telling us about it. Where do we follow you two, Kathleen or Bo? Do you have Instagrams or websites or something?
Yes, I'm on Instagram as @TeamPowerAwesomeTeam.
Say that one more time.
@TeamPowerAwesomeTeam.
Team Power Awesome Team. Got it. Okay. What about you, Kathleen?
I'm just Alas Kathleen.
Excellent.
But
Alas
he posts
Kathleen.
More, so I would say definitely, yeah.
And there are two opportunities also to come make art with Bo and Kathleen this month.
So tell
check
us about
that.
That.
So December 6th, the day after Gallery Walk, is a very informal come drop in and just make art with Bo and hang out with Bo. And we'll provide a bunch of acrylic paints and materials to paint on. And then later in the month is a coffee filter roses workshop with Kathleen. And that one you do need to pre-register for. And it will probably fill up, so register early.
Oh, excellent. So two extra opportunities to hang out with Bo and Kathleen.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. Excellent. And you can see all that at juno.org/museum, right?
Of course.
Of course. Well, Gwyneth Cheese Kate, Gwyneth Cheese Kathleen, Gwyneth Cheese Bo, thanks for coming in
for
and sharing us all, telling us all about it. I really
Gwyneth
appreciate it.
Thanks, Cheese. Boston. Gwyneth Cheese.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Local stories, local events, local connections, supported by you and your membership at ktoo.org. Tomorrow's show, more Gallery Walk previews with Christine Carpenter and a sneak peek at a cool Foundation for the End of Life care talk that could revolutionize your life. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. You can find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. You can also find live stream archives on KTO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Alaska Airlines, Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gwyneth Cheese, have a good Tuesday, Juno evening.